Live from the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff. To join us on the air, just dial toll-free 1-888-ASK-HANK. That's 888-275-4265. To find out more about the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast, just log on to our website at equip.org. Now, here's the host of the Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. We'll be going to your questions live in just a few moments, but I want to begin the broadcast today by drawing your attention to what you would expect me to draw your attention to, October 31st, the whole issue of Halloween. I have an entry in the Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition titled, How Should Christians Respond to Halloween? Of course, there are so many questions that surround Halloween, such as should we participate, accommodate, or should we vigorously denounce Halloween? And to answer questions like that, it's always helpful to view Halloween from the perspective of history. And when you do, you find that it is rooted in the ancient Celtic feast of Samhain. The Druids believed that on the eve of Samhain, the veil between the present world and the world beyond was pierced, releasing demons, witches, hobgoblins to harass the living. So in order to make themselves immune from attack, people disguised themselves as witches and devils and ghouls. Why? Because they were attempting to ward off evil spirits. And they did that in a myriad of ways, including carving grotesque faces on gourds, which were illuminated with candles. And then they placated the spirits with a variety of treats. But I think what's instructive for us today is to recognize that there's a lot we can learn from Christian history as well. How did early Christians respond to Halloween? Well, October 31st, the eve prior to All Saints' Day, was designated as a spiritually edifying holiday or holy day on which to proclaim the supremacy of the gospel over the superstition of ghosts. And therefore, All Hallows' Eve, from which the word Halloween is derived, was an attempt on the part of Christianity to overwhelm the tradition of ghouls with the truth of the gospel. Now, we have to admit that Halloween is once again predominantly pagan, but again, we have to see the silver lining that the early Christian church saw. In other words, the trick is to treat Halloween as a strategic opportunity, not a time of solely satanic oppression. And it is so important for us today to seize every opportunity so that our voice might be heard, so that we can, in essence, emit a clarion call to a culture that is devolving before our very eyes. Now, I've talked about this many times on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. As Christians, the ultimate for us is to reach people, to change hearts, because when hearts are changed, behavior is changed as well. But there's another issue that we ought to be involved in, and that is legislation. Because the reality is this, someone's morality will be legislated. And if we are not involved in the process, we cannot bring to bear those things which will ultimately liberate people from bondage, which is precisely what Western civilization, built on the DNA of the Bible, did. Frank Turek, a friend and a Christian scholar, an author, has written an article for a past edition of the Christian Research Journal. It's recent and it's very instructive. And he tackles this issue, is legislating morality a biblical concept? In other words, is this something that we can justify through the lens of a biblical worldview? He joins me in studio to discuss this issue, a very important issue, as we're just about a week away from the election. As always, Frank, good to have you in studio.
Hank, it's a blessing to be here. Thanks.
Why must Christians legislate morality? And I suppose the operative word from your perspective is the word must. Why must we?
Well, if we don't legislate morality, somebody else is going to legislate immorality. And that's what's been going on in our country. The reason our country is in such a mess, Hank, is because Christians have gotten out of being salt and light everywhere. You know this, and I know many of your listeners know this, but really the church has not been the church for about the past 100 years. We went anti-intellectual about 100 years ago. We said, let's not get involved in these unspiritual things like politics or journalism or education or
arts
or media or these kinds of things. Let's not get involved in law. Those things are dirty. Let's just get involved in ministry. Let's just go on the mission field and go to churches and that kind of thing. We're all for that, don't get me wrong. But a Christian is supposed to be a Christian everywhere, in everything. And when you take the godly people out of anything, whether it's a culture, whether it's politics, whether it's education, you get godlessness, and that's what we have in our culture today. It's not the liberals or the pagans' fault that our country is going the wrong way. It's our fault because we have not been the salt and light we've supposed to have been.
Yeah, we're called to be ambassadors for Jesus Christ, and most of us have been secret agents who have never blown their cover before the general world. One of the issues that you raise in this, in fact, a couple of issues that you raise in this article have to do with same-sex sexuality as well as abortion. You say the life issue is the issue, very much like Francis Schaeffer did. He said that was going to be the defining issue. If we don't stand there, we're going to fall for everything else. But one of the issues here for me is that if in fact, Christians are not equipped. You talked about the life of the mind here a moment ago. If Christians are not equipped to deal effectively with an issue like that, they are going to be relegated to the status of bigot. And I think that underscores your point, just how important it is for us as Christians to grapple with these issues so that we can give salient, credible answers, whether we're on television shows or whether we're just talking to someone across the fence.
Well, one of the first questions I think we need to ask when somebody says you're a bigot, my question is, what do you mean by bigotry? Because as soon as they start to define it, Hank, they're dead. Am I a bigot because I don't agree with you? If that's the case, then why aren't you a bigot for not agreeing with me? Oh, well, you're a bigot because you don't want to allow people to marry one another. Well, how is that bigotry? See, same-sex relationships and opposite-sex relationships, they are different behaviors. There's no bigotry against anybody here. There's no discrimination against any person here. We are discriminating against behaviors, but we are not discriminating against people, because same-sex relationship is a different relationship than an opposite-sex relationship. And the issue here is what relationship should be promoted by the government? There's only three things a government can do on any issue. They can prohibit the behavior, they can permit the behavior, or they can promote the behavior. Right now, same-sex relationships are permitted. Nobody's going to stop you if you want to get together and commit yourself to another person of the same sex till death do you part. But in most states, that behavior is not promoted. Why? Because it brings no benefit to society. The behavior that does bring benefit to society is when a man and a woman come together, because a man and a woman coming together is the foundation of society. It perpetuates and stabilizes society. And the danger here is that if you equate the two relationships, if you start promoting same-sex relationships as heterosexual relationships, as marriage, what you're saying is that marriage has nothing to do with children, that marriage is just about coupling. You are completely divorcing the institution of marriage from children. Well, if you divorce the institution of marriage from children, then what happens is people continue to have children, but they don't necessarily get married to have children. And then you have illegitimacy and all the problems that flow from that. So the real issue here is what behavior should be promoted by the government. I think the only behavior when it comes to sexual behavior is between a man and a woman, because it alone perpetuates and stabilizes society.
As a function of natural law.
Of course it is. You don't even need the Bible to know this. Every faith knows this. Even atheists know that men were made for women. You don't need a Bible to know that. It's really self-evident. Now, there's many people out there who suppress that. And the reason for that is, Hank, And I know many, I have friends who disagree with me on this because they consider themselves homosexual. In fact, I had a friend who many years ago got very involved in homosexuality, and we buried him at the age of 36. He was dead from AIDS. And so this issue has affected me personally, but I think we just have to tell the truth. And promoting same-sex relationships to the same level as heterosexual relationships is simply going to change the institution of marriage fundamentally, civilly, and that's going to be a disaster for the future. Not short-term, long-term.
I want to ask you a couple of questions about the election, but before I get to that, I want to underscore something that you alluded to, the difference between behavior and identity.
Mm-hmm. Well, the difference is that the law deals with behavior. It doesn't deal with identity or people.
So homosexuality is a behavior, not an identity.
Of course it is, just like heterosexuality is. We consider ourselves heterosexual because we engage in heterosexual behavior with our wives. But you don't have to engage in that behavior. You're not forced to engage in that behavior. Even if you were born with a propensity toward that behavior, you don't have to do it. The question is, what should the government do? Should it promote the behavior? Should it permit the behavior? Or should it prohibit the behavior? And again, we're dealing with behaviors here. We're not dealing with people. Now, there were some bad laws, like laws that prevented, say, interracial marriage, and homosexuals will say, well, this is the same thing. No, it's not. It's not the same thing at all. Same-sex behavior is different than having skin color. Skin color is irrelevant to behavior. You don't have to behave a certain way because you have a certain skin color, but engaging in a homosexual relationship is a behavior, and gender has everything to do with marriage. Skin color has nothing to do with marriage.
I want to ask you about the election. A lot of people that I have talked to recently, some on air, have suggested that we have two really bad choices. We deserve those two really bad choices, but because we have two bad choices, they don't want to vote. What's your response?
I'd say an election is always, always, always the choice between the lesser of two evils. If Billy Graham were running against Hitler, it would be the lesser of two evils. Why? Because we're all evil. Now, I hasten to add, Hank, I'd vote for Billy Graham. But my point is that there are no perfect candidates because there are no perfect people. If you go to what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 23, he's going after the Pharisees, who were the political leaders of Israel, by the way. It's often overlooked. They say Jesus never got involved in politics. He certainly did. He went after the political leaders of Israel. Rome delegated much of the political authority to the Sanhedrin, who were the Pharisees. And he basically said to them that you've neglected the weightier matters of the law. You're tithing your spices, but you're neglecting the weightier matters of the law. We're doing that in this country here right now. We've got people in Washington, Hank, the president's one of them, who says that you ought to use certain light bulbs, and they're telling us what the lunch menu should be at school, but they want to put no restrictions on abortion. They want to tell us what light bulbs to use, but they won't tell us don't kill your children. Are we neglecting the weightier matters of the law right now in this culture? Yes, we are. So I think you need to look at what are the weightier matters of the law? For me right now, there are four major issues. Life. It's the main issue because if you don't have life, you don't have anything. The right to life is the right to all of the rights. Marriage, because without marriage between a man and a woman, ultimately the society will crumble. It is the best form of government, the biological two-parent family. Third, religious liberty. You can't preach the gospel if you don't have religious liberty. And some of the mandates coming out of Obamacare now are preventing religious liberty. Number four, the economy and particularly the debt, because in fact, you and I were talking about this earlier. The debt is going to destroy us ultimately. So those four issues are critical.
One of the things we talk about when we talk about the Christian Research Journal, and of course the article that we're discussing by Frank Turk is in the Christian Research Journal, Why Christians Must Legislate Morality. But there's a very significant picture in this article. And this is one of the things we try to do. We try to marry content and form in such a way that the graphics enhance the message. Mm-hmm. And I think this picture, which we're going to talk about after the break, really enhances the message. It's a picture which you have on your iPhone, and it reminds you of a very salient reality. It's not theoretical, it's practical, It's real, it's defensible, and we're going to be talking about it after the break. One of the things I do want to mention is the Christian Research Journal is an award-winning magazine that no Christian home should be without. You can order in a safe, secure fashion on the World Wide Web at equip.org. You can order via the mail at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Or you can pick up the telephone and talk to one of our resource consultants and order via the telephone, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. If you're ordering on the web, do remember the special offer code TRUTH. Get a one-year subscription to the journal for $35 plus a free promotional issue. That's 7 issues for only $35. Subscribe online at equip.org and remember to use the special offer code TRUTH. Also want to remind you, Life After Life After Life, it's the sneak peek preview booklet of my upcoming book, which will be out next year. For your gift to the ministry, let us know immediately. We need the resources. We need you to pray for us. We need to support us financially. And when you do, I'll send you Life After Life After Life. Check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. Be right back.
The Christian Research Journal is a one-of-a-kind magazine, combining eye-catching graphics with trustworthy content you can depend on. Get a biblical perspective on current events, religious movements, and cultural trends, and gain the discernment skills you need to defend the faith. Start your subscription today by calling 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. The Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff will be right back after this. It seems like a no-brainer. If God is a God of love, there's no way He'd condemn anyone to suffer eternally in hell simply for not believing in Jesus, right? Christians who believe in an eternal hell have been accused of following a cruel and unjust God. Millions of atheists claim it's the reason they can't embrace Christianity. Do we need to abandon the concept of hell? Hank's new book, Afterlife, to be released next spring, answers this and many other questions about our eternal future. But because you need to be equipped now with answers about hell, we're offering you a sneak peek booklet, Life After Life After Life, for your ministry support today. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is entirely listener supported, so your gift matters. Be one of the first to have your copy of Life After Life After Life. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching graphics with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what you'll find in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The greatest apologetic for Christianity is its founder. All that the Lord Jesus was, said, and did. A natural avenue for Christian apologetics to Muslims, then, is to contrast the words and works of Jesus and Muhammad. Other topics include, did Daniel accurately predict a succession of nations? Sci-fi, free will, and the problem of evil. What has poetry to do with evangelism? A summary critique, Lawrence M. Krauss's A Universe from Nothing, Arthur Goldwag's The New Hate, John Gribben's Alone in the Universe, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org.
Are you a Christian looking for a phenomenal Bible app? The Word of Promise Bible app may be exactly what you've been looking for. You'll experience the Bible like never before. This free app includes the entire New King James Bible text with powerful search capabilities. For example, you can look for a word like love, and every verse that includes love will appear. Also included is the entire two-hour audio Gospel of John featuring world-renowned actors. This two-hour audio Gospel of John is fully dramatized with sound effects, with an original music score, and is synchronized to the text so that as you hear this powerful audio theater, the text appears verse by verse. Receive your free Word of Promise Bible app today at equip.org.
Is legislating morality biblical? Whether your politics are on the right, the left, or somewhere in between, there is a more fundamental question to answer before deciding how to vote. Are Christians called to use the political process to enshrine biblical morality into law? The Christian Research Journal answers this question in a full-length viewpoint debate. The eye-catching, content-rich Christian Research Journal is CRI's flagship publication, designed to equip you in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Subscribe to the journal online at equip.org or by calling 888-7000-CRI. Once again, here's CRI President Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and we will get to your questions in just a few moments, so please be patient. Appreciate those that have been hanging on for a while. But I do think that the subject that we're talking about is subject that we broached in the Christian Research Journal, Why Christians Must Legislate Morality. Frank Turek's perspective is amplified by a picture that elucidates the content. And what Frank says is that when he has a minute to communicate the importance to Christians being involved in politics, he always goes to his iPhone and he pulls up a satellite picture of the Korean Peninsula. And I actually, not all that long ago, Frank, stood on the demilitarized zone and looked with the binoculars over into North Korea. So I know what you're talking about here, but I think this is a very graphic illustration in picture form of what you're communicating in terms of the content.
Sure. If you're not driving right now, Google Korea Satellite Night. And if you Google that, you will see a number of pictures of the Korean Peninsula at night. And what you will see in this homogeneous peninsula, really, made of mostly Koreans, you'll see the South filled with light. It's filled with productivity. It's filled with the gospel. It's one of the most Christianized countries in the world. When you just look just north of the border that you just mentioned, Hank, you see darkness across the country. South Korea has freedom. North Korea does not. There's one major reason for the difference between South and North Korea, and the answer is politics. The South has freedom. The North is a communist dictatorship. And when I hear Christians saying we ought just go out there and preach the gospel, we can't get involved in politics, I always say to them, if you think the gospel is important, you better think politics is important, because if you don't have political freedom, you can't preach the gospel, not legally anyway. In fact, Hank, you can't do what we're doing on this radio program right now in North Korea. You can't do it in Iran. You can't do it in Saudi Arabia. You can't do it in China. I've been to all those countries. You can't do it in Israel. You can't do this in Canada in some areas because of some of the laws they've put into place. So politics affects everything we do. In fact, politics affects your church, your children, your health, your money, your business, your freedom, your property, your school, your home, your security, your safety, the poor, the unborn. Politics affects everything we do. It is complete nonsense to say that Christians ought to forfeit your right to get involved politically because the laws that are made in Washington, the laws that are made in the state governments, the laws that are made in your local governments affect everything we do, even your church.
Talk about articles like this in the Christian Research Journal. Not all that long ago, I had Jay Richards on talking about same-sex sexuality, and he gives the rational argument for why it really does matter. One of the arguments he uses, of course, is that if you're counterfeiting dollars in North Carolina, it affects people in New York and California.
Sure.
Same thing if you devalue marriage.
Well, the Christian Research Journal, and you didn't ask me to say this, I wanted to say this, I read this thing cover to cover every time I get it, and it literally is filled with gems cover to cover. There are very few ads in it, and it comes out four, maybe five times a year. And Hank, I don't know why every Christian doesn't get the Christian Research Journal. It comes out six times? Okay, it comes out six times a year. And I don't understand why, because virtually every article I want to read. There may be one on occasion I go, well, I'm not interested in that. But I'm telling you, Hank, every article, and it's beautifully done. I mean, the graphics are beautiful, but of course, the writing is the best part. It's just an amazing resource that I use. And, you know, I'm on college campuses all the time, Hank. I mean, that's what I do. I do. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist college campus presentations. And so I get every question known to man from every hostile, you know, atheist and non-believer out there. And this Christian Research Journal helps me every time. I mean, it's just an amazing resource. And so I would urge people out there, if you don't get the Christian Research Journal, my question is, why not? It doesn't cost a lot of money. How do they get it, by the way? I don't even, what do you call it, 1-800
or something? Yeah, I mean, perfect opportunity to tell people that not only can they order in a safe, secure fashion on the World Wide Web at equip.org, but we have a special offer code TRUTH. Get a one-year subscription to the journal for $35 plus a free promotional issue. In other words, 7 issues for only $35. Again, when you subscribe online at equip.org, use the special offer code TRUTH. Let's take a couple of questions.
One more thing. Let me mention something. People out there are trying to figure out what to get their loved ones for Christmas.
Subscription.
Why not get a subscription right now? They're gonna get great stuff 6 times a year. That gift is going to keep giving 6 times a year. Call now. Get the subscription now. It's easy. It's done. $35, please.
Or you can write me. Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. You can also talk to our resource consultants, 888-7000, letter CRI. In other words, you can pick up the phone and have immediate gratification. Let's take a couple of calls. Linda in Arizona, listening on Sirius XM 131. You're on the air. Hi, Linda.
Hello, Hank. I'm listening to you as we speak, and I was really gratified hearing you say it's about the lesser of two evils. And, of course, my opinion is I think the correct one, but speaking of the lesser of two evils, the one candidate believes and promotes gay lesbian and gay marriages and abortion, the other one doesn't, but he's also a Mormon, which is not really a true Christian. So how does that figure into it?
Good question.
Yeah, it's an excellent question, Linda. The Mormonism in this case isn't really the issue. The issue is how will the individual govern morally? That's the question. How will the individual govern on the more important matters of the law, which is what Jesus says to the politicians in Matthew chapter 23? And I think if you look at these two candidates, you will find Barack Obama for abortion, not only for abortion, but he wants you to pay for it. It's taxpayer-funded abortion. He's for same-sex marriage, which really is genderless marriage. All marriage becomes genderless. And he's also taking away religious freedom and, of course, bringing up unimaginable debt. Mitt Romney, on the other hand, is pro-life. He wants a marriage amendment to protect marriage. He is also for religious freedom. He wants to repeal Obamacare. And he says he wants to get rid of the debt. I feel better about the fact that he's got Paul Ryan on his team, because Paul Ryan is an absolute genius when it comes to the budget. So I think the issue isn't necessarily the religion, but how is the individual going to govern morally? And in this case, it appears Mitt Romney will govern more morally according to biblical values than will the Democrats.
I want to mention another thing, Linda. You can go to the World Wide Web at equip.org, and there's an article by Francis Beckwith, Is It Permissible for a Christian to Vote for a Mormon? One of the points that he makes in the article is that the Ten Commandments tell us that there is a rightly ordered social fabric and describe something of God's plan for it. In political terms, that can be translated to the government respecting and privileging religious liberty, the right to life, traditional marriage, parenthood, integrity, etc. And he goes on to say that a candidate who embraces these ideals and treats people justly is a candidate whose behavior Scripture supports, even if he or she is not a Christian, and is therefore a candidate that a Christian can support with a clear conscience. So is it permissible for a Christian to vote for a Mormon? Frank Beckwith says, absolutely. In fact, in some cases, a Christian conscience may require him or her to support the Mormon candidate, in that candidate is the person most likely to advance the common good. Again, this article in the Christian Research Journal. But here's an interesting sidelight to this, Frank. I had Sandra Tanner on the broadcast. She's probably the most knowledgeable person on the planet today when it comes to Mormonism. She's the great-great-great-granddaughter of Brigham Young. And on the broadcast, she made the statement that she not only could vote for a Mormon, but has voted for Mormons. She's based in Utah.
Of course.
Yeah. And so The point here is we can't tell people who to vote for, but what we can do is say that there are very significant issues, and we have to look at those issues through the prism of a biblical worldview, and we have to, as you said correctly earlier on, we have to make the best choice given the options we're presented mm-hmm. with.
And some will say, well, what about third-party candidates? I say, let's be real here. There is no third-party candidate that is going to win. Your opportunity to vote for other candidates comes in the primaries. Once now, Mitt Romney, I'll tell you the truth, is not my first choice when it comes to, you know, in the primaries. I was more behind, I think, Rick Santorum, but he didn't make it. So you always go, and Rick Santorum's not the perfect candidate. You always have to go with. If I was running, I'd be the, in my view, the least worst choice against Barack Obama. Okay, but I'm not perfect either. Anybody that runs is going to have faults. I have faults, certainly. Mitt Romney has faults. Barack Obama, everyone has faults. The question is, who is going to govern at least the more biblically, maybe not perfectly, but the more biblically? And I think in this case, and I'm not endorsing candidates here, that's not my job, but as I look at the issues, I think Mitt Romney and the Republicans line up more with biblical values, natural law values, as you said before, Hank, than do the Democrats. In fact, it's in the Democratic platform now. They're for same-sex marriage and taxpayer-funded abortion.
One of the things Oz Guinness makes a point in a book, I think it was titled A Free People's Suicide. He makes the point that abortion, as you outlined earlier, is a very significant issue. And that almost goes without saying, but I think there is this creeping fetus fatigue where, oh yeah, we've been there, done that, we've talked about it, we've moved on now. Even amongst Christians, a failure to recognize that since Roe v. Wade, we have aborted 50 million or more children, enough people to populate Great Britain.
Well, let me point out one thing, and I'd like to talk about this after the break a little bit too, Hank, if we could. But people have a misunderstanding about Roe v. Wade. If Roe v. Wade were overturned tomorrow, abortion would not be criminalized. It would simply send the issue back to the states, and state legislatures and the people of those states would decide what they do with abortion. Some states, like California, New York, would probably keep abortion as it is. Other states, maybe like Mississippi and Louisiana and maybe South Dakota, would put restrictions on abortion. Overturning Roe v. Wade would simply put the issue back to where people could vote on it. And that's what Mitt Romney wants to do. He wants people to vote on it. Barack Obama and the Democrats don't want people to vote on it. So this is an issue of, can we govern ourselves or not?
After the break, I want to ask you the question respecting separation of church and state. This is always brought up in the issue. We have to have a salient answer to this. A reason always to give with gentleness and with respect. Again, the Christian Research Journal, we're highlighting it because this is a perfect time to talk about legislating morality, whether or not that's biblical. Frank wrote the article. It's a lead story in the Christian Research Journal, is Legislating Morality Biblical? We'll send that article, by the way, or not just the article, the entire issue to you as a absolutely free gift. When you subscribe, a one-year subscription to the journal, $35, you get this free issue. Again, that's 7 issues for only $35. Subscribe online at equip.org and use the special offer code TRUTH. We'll be taking some of your calls after the break as well. As always, the number to dial in the U.S. or Canada, 888-ASK-HANK. That translates to 888-275-4265. And once again, do remember the safe, secure fashion to order, to give, equip.org on the World Wide Web. And we need your support. We do what we do because truth matters. If you love truth, stand with us prayerfully and financially. It'll make a big difference in the lives of people for time and for eternity.
The things we accumulate over our lifetimes, money, personal possessions, and property, are simply gifts from God, entrusted to us to manage as His servants. When we as Christians create a will or trust, what we're really doing is planning to transfer stewardship of what God has entrusted us to others. For many of us, this may be one of the most important acts of stewardship we will ever undertake. We have made special arrangements for you to explore this stewardship responsibility. Visit our website at equiplegacy.org/EPO. There you will find the estate plan organizer, To learn more, go to equiplegacy.org/EPO. The Bible Answer Man broadcast will return after this. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching graphics with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what you'll find in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Should Christians attend same-sex weddings? Would saying yes signal an endorsement? Would saying no signal a lack of commitment to the loved one? There are no easy answers. Other topics include confronting the apologetic challenges of a secular culture, reflections on the girl with the dragon tattoo, sci-fi, free will, and the problem of evil, Muhammad and the Messiah, comparing the central figures of Islam and Christianity, what has poetry to do with evangelism, robbing Paul to pay Peter and James, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. With the vast amount of information flooding the internet, how can you determine what's true? How can you be certain that what you're viewing is reliable? Well, equip.org is a safe haven with content you can trust. Content that has been well researched and designed to deepen your discernment skills and help equip you to defend the faith. At equip.org, you can search articles, books, and videos, listen to the Bible Answer Man right from your computer, or listen to an Ask Hank program where Hank takes just a few minutes to answer important questions about the Bible and Christianity. You can also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, read our blog, or receive special benefits by signing up for our weekly e-newsletter. Don't founder in the sea of misinformation. Make equip.org your homepage today. Again, the address is equip.org. It seems like a no-brainer. If God is a God of love, there's no way He'd condemn anyone to suffer eternally in hell simply for not believing in Jesus, right? Christians who believe in an eternal hell have been accused of following a cruel and unjust God. Millions of atheists claim it's the reason they can't embrace Christianity. Do we need to abandon the concept of hell? Hank's new book, Afterlife, to be released next spring, answers this and many other questions about our eternal future. But because you need to be equipped now with answers about hell, we're offering you a sneak peek booklet, Life After Life After Life, for your ministry support today. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is entirely listener supported, so your gift matters. Be one of the first to have your copy of Life After Life After Life. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Christian Research Journal is CRI's flagship publication designed to equip you in doctrine, defense, and discernment. When you subscribe to the journal, you'll receive a magazine that's not only scholarly in its substance, but beautiful in its presentation, easily accessible and relevant, with stunning graphics and rich content written by respected theologians and communicators. The Christian Research Journal is a must-have resource that no Christian home should be without. Start your subscription today. Call 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Now, back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And we want to go right back to our phone callers in just a moment. Quick question for Frank Turek, and then we will go to the phone calls. Frank, in your article, Why Christians Must Legislate Morality, that article in the Christian Research Journal is mentioned, you talk about the argument that comes up over and over again regarding separation of church and state.
Right, yeah, that's actually a misunderstanding of what we're doing here. We're not legislating religion, but we are legislating morality. Nobody is telling someone where, when, how, or if to be a member of a church. We're not saying you need to obey certain rituals or certain rites, but we are telling people how they ought to treat one another, and that's what all laws do. All laws legislate morality. See, religion has more to do with our duty to God, where morality has more to do with our duty to one another. And so all laws legislate morality. You say, well, it's in the Bible, so we can't legislate it. Well, that's nonsense. If that were the case, you couldn't have virtually any criminal law, because just about every criminal law is in some way consistent with one of the Ten Commandments. You know, because the Bible says, thou shalt not murder, should we not have laws against murder? Now, we don't legislate the Bible as such, Hank, but we do legislate principles consistent with the Bible. We legislate the moral law that Thomas Jefferson said was self-evident and that the Apostle Paul said is written on the hearts of all men in Romans chapter 2. So we're not necessarily directly legislating the Bible, but we are legislating principles consistent with the Bible because they come from the same source, God. So we're not legislating religion, but we are legislating morality. One more point on this. You know, there are churches on both sides of some of these issues. Some liberal churches are for abortion and for same-sex marriage, contrary to Scripture. If we can't legislate church positions, then we can't legislate their position either. See, you couldn't have laws on anything then, because you have churches on both sides of all these issues. So the issue isn't religion, the issue is morality, and all laws do legislate morality.
Well, stick around. We'll answer some questions. Monica, she's listening in Missouri. Hi, Monica.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, I have a question. It involves Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney and the budget that they have proposed for our future. And in their budget, which the Catholic Church has denounced, they cut programs for the poor. And I thought, as your guest was just saying, we are obligated to care for our poor and care for those needy. But I don't understand how you can support a person like that.
Well, that's a good question, Monica, and I'm not sure the Catholic Church has renounced it. I know the Catholic Church has gone after Obamacare because of their restrictions on religious liberty and forcing all Christians or all people of faith or all people just have a conscience objection to support abortion and contraception. But the question is, what is the best way to help the poor, and does the Bible command the government to help the poor, or does it command Christians to help the poor? Because if we're going to say that whatever is in the Bible the government must do, then we have to say the government must also preach the gospel, right? Are you still there, Monica?
That's very confusing. I'm still here. No, I'm not saying that the government must preach the Bible or vice versa. What I'm saying is that we have a moral obligation to those people that have less than we do to take care of them. That is our moral obligation, isn't it?
Yes, I agree, but what is the best way of doing that? Is it the government, or is it Christians coming together to help people? And might the government...
I think it's both.
Okay.
I think it's both.
But Monica, if I could, let me make one point. First of all, I think you're making a good point, but the counterpoint to your point, from my perspective, would be that the more money that the government confiscates for counterproductive welfare programs, the less money available for charities, because money is not omnipresent. And I think that's the point that Frank is alluding to. Is what is now currently in place the best, the most effective way of helping the poor? If it is, then your point is well taken. If it is not, then I think you have to look for better solutions. Again, money is not omnipresent.
I understand that, Hank, but what I'm saying is that in Mitt Romney's world and Paul Ryan's world, and even in Barack Obama's world, they want to increase these taxes, or the Republicans want to lower the taxes, which takes away from more than just helping the needy. And with Barack Obama, who has lowered taxes in his way and is expecting to raise the taxes, I don't understand how we can say that we are not able to help our poor and our needy when we are giving money anyway.
Well, your point is well taken.
Paul Ryan has decided in his budget that poor people should not be cared for.
No, I don't think that's the case, Monica. I'm saying we need to be more efficient with taking care of the poor. And the question is it better to increase the number of, say, food stamp recipients from 32 million to 47 million, which has happened over the past 4 years? Or is it better to create an economy where such an increase is not needed? And there's a great book that Hank and I both love. It's by a friend of ours by the name of Jay Richards. It's called Money, Greed, and God. I think, do you provide it here at the Christian?
Yep, we do. It's on the
World Wide Web. Monica, that book opened my eyes to economic issues because I agree with you. You know, you see a problem, you see poor, you say, well, the government can fix it. The government can go in there and fix the poor situation. We've poured so much money toward the poor since LBJ, and yet we have now more people in poverty than we did back then. There's got to be something wrong with our approach. We all want to help the poor. The question is, how do we do it? I highly urge you to get that book, Money, Greed, and God.
You can find it on the web, but Monica, you know, the sentiment behind your question, mm-hmm. I think, is something that we all need to take seriously. Mm-hmm. Because I think in large and small ways, all of us are guilty at this point, where we walk past those who are in need and do not care for them as we are called to do. And of course, this is something that Christ brings up in Luke chapter 16, where there's a rich man, and we're all rich mm-hmm. from the perspective of the poor worldwide, who is dressed in linen. He walks by a beggar laying by his gate every day and does nothing about it. The beggar is only cared for by dogs. And then Christ points out the graphic reality of what Frank was talking about in the second segment. We tithe our mint and our cumin, but we neglect the weightier matters of the law, justice and righteousness and equity and what you underscore, care for the poor. So your point is a valid point, and I don't want to diminish it in any sense by giving the counter argument, although I feel strongly about the counter argument. I think that the point you bring up is a point that we do need to take seriously.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. Thank you for answering my question. I do listen to you all the time, Hank.
Well, bless you, Monica.
You're one of my favorite people.
Well, thank you. You are so kind. I want to go back to the phone lines, talk to BJ in Tacoma, Washington, listening on KCIS. Hi, BJ.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Hi, Hank. I've been listening to you for many years and enjoy your program. I don't always agree with you, but...
That means you're thinking.
Yes, as a Christian since 1977, I glean from all God's people.
Bless
and that's
you.
The way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
My question is, though, I have a master's in biblical studies, and I've never seen in the Bible where it says that we're to choose evil as God's people. And I hear a lot of Christians, even some of my friends, say we're to choose the lesser of two evils. Now, where does God teach us to do that?
Well, let me open up on this and then turn it over to Frank, but... You know, the Bible never condones lying qua lying or lying for the sake of lying, but it does condone lying in order to preserve a higher moral imperative. If there's a higher moral imperative, there's a lower moral imperative. And the biblical example I would start with is Rahab, who purposed to deceive, which was the moral law at a lesser level, in order to preserve the lives of two Jewish spies, which is the higher moral law. And I think in the same way, a Christian father today would not hesitate to lie in order to protect his wife and daughters from the imminent threat of rape or murder. So I do think that there are examples in the Bible that outline this as a theological deduction, if not an explicit statement.
Yes, and I think as well, BJ, my point is that a theological point that we're all depraved, that no matter who you choose, you're choosing evil. I know that sounds extreme, but we're all depraved individuals. And we say, well, let's pick a good candidate. Well, we use that kind of natural language when we're discussing, but theologically, everyone is evil. Everyone is fallen. And you're never going to find a perfect candidate. And my point is that whoever is running, it's usually, I should say, it's always a choice between the lesser of two evils.
Okay, I hear what you're saying, but don't, it's like the Christians. And like I said, I've been a Christian since 1977, mm-hmm. and it's the Christians that are saying this, choose between two evils, as though God has told us to do that, and he has not in his word ever.
Well, I just gave you some examples, BJ. What about those examples?
I got that one about Rahab, but God didn't tell her to do that. She
was commended for it. I mean,
and that's fine. That's fine, Hank. And there are other people in the Bible who have stood up against evil and done things that are not right, as we would say right.
Yeah.
But they were not condemned for it. But what I don't appreciate is that we come across as though God is telling us to choose between two evils. And he has never told us to choose evil. It's okay to say this, but don't come across as though this is God's word and he's saying this. If it's our opinion, fine. If we have made all the calculations and this person is better in our eyesight than the other person, then yes, tell us that.
Yeah, BJ, sorry to interrupt you, only because of time. What I want to mention is that Frank has made the pragmatic observation that we are all fallen, and therefore it's always a choice between two evils by definition. But in the interest of truth, to your point, BJ, I should first disclose the fact that Christian theologians are divided on that subject. Some, like St. Augustine, believe that it was never permissible to lie. Others, like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who had ample time to contemplate this issue from the perspective of a Nazi prison cell, held that under certain circumstances, lying was not only morally permissible, but morally mandated. So from that point, you get the point where, while the Bible never condones lying for the sake of lying, it does condone lying in order to preserve a higher moral imperative. Out of time, BJ, appreciate your call and your very thoughtful answer. I'm going to stay right here for an extra hour. Once we go off the air, we'll continue taking your calls right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. If you're hanging on, be patient. If you're dialing in, write down this number and call me during the next hour. I'll answer your question, 888-ASK-HANK. Out of time, out of here. See you next time.
We appreciate you tuning in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Before we sign off today, here's our contact information. By phone, dial 888-7000-CRI, which translates to 888-7000-274. On the internet, log on to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Our prayer is that today's broadcast has deepened your understanding of the Scriptures and equipped you to better defend your faith. Thank you for listening. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by the Christian Research Institute, a ministry supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters.
Are you a Christian looking for a phenomenal Bible app? The Word of Promise Bible app may be exactly what you've been looking for. You'll experience the Bible like never before. This free app includes the entire New King James Bible text with powerful search capabilities. For example, you can look for a word like love, and every verse that includes love will appear. Also included is the entire two-hour audio gospel of John featuring world-renowned actors. This two-hour audio gospel of John is fully dramatized with sound effects, with an original music score, and is synchronized to the text so that as you hear this powerful audio theater, the text appears verse by verse. Receive your free Word of Promise Bible app today at equip.org.
With the vast amount of information flooding the internet, how can you determine what's true? How can you be certain that what you're viewing is reliable? Well, equip.org is a safe haven with content you can trust. Content that has been well researched and designed to deepen your discernment skills and help equip you to defend the faith. At equip.org, you can search articles, books, and videos. Listen to the Bible Answer Man right from your computer. Or listen to an Ask Hank program where Hank takes just a few minutes to answer important questions about the Bible and Christianity. You can also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, read our blog, or receive special benefits by signing up for our weekly e-newsletter. Don't founder in the sea of misinformation. Make equip.org your homepage today. Again, the address is equip.org.